today. It's not pleasant, but it's time we address the problem of ratting. The latest unfortunate craze down your local morgue. But it won't all be ugliness on today's show. Oh no, we've got a fantastic investment opportunity from the Bank of Martin Malloy. Another spectacular round of Beat the Beasley. Oh, that gets pretty ugly. And a surprise cameo from Captain Cook's newly recovered Diddy Box. We'll play Radio Gladiators. Mick will ask, what's all that about? We'll dish out the Fumio and welcome our live guest, comedian Dave O'Neill. Also today, we'll declare open the Martin Malloy website and meet the winner of our recent youth training scheme. Yes, it's all coming up on the program. That's the Information Superhighway's most notorious accident black spot, Martin Malloy.
S.E.M.
That's the way a woman feels. That'd be Tina Arena here at Martin Malloy. The last one for the week, right around Australia with myself, Tony Martin, and this bloke here, a man who I can honestly say is of prime ministerial stature. That's right, he's often booed and jostled by angry students. It's Mick Malloy.
Should have seen me coming in today, Tone. I've had to run the gauntlet.
Well, it's not just you and me in the studio today because It's time to welcome somebody who is, in fact, the winner of a little competition our promotions department got up and running a few months back now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It was the Martin Malloy Youth Training Scheme.
Yep.
We're giving somebody an opportunity to come in here, sit in on the show, see how it's done, and possibly be a broadcaster of the future. Please welcome Danielle. Danielle, thanks for coming in today.
It's okay.
Now, how old are you?
15.
And I understand you've got no idea who we are.
Who told you that?
Yeah, a little whisper going around the office now. Have you enjoyed yourself today? Is there anything you've done we should know about? How's that bag of washing I bought in? Is that just about finished?
Yeah.
Good. Now, have you learnt anything today? What skills have you picked up just hanging out at the station?
Nothing.
Well done. That's what we learn every day.
All right. Well, I think there's at least four departments you'll slot into nicely there. And have you got a big bag of T-shirts with the station logo on?
Yep.
Oh, well done. All right. She is learning fast.
She'll be general manager in no time. Now, we've got a little task for you. It's going to be easy. We just want you to help out with the nominees for our big award ceremony. It's about to happen. It'll be fun. There could be a silver chair CD in it for you. Okay. And it is Friday, of course, and that means it's time to persist with a little tradition here on the program. Every Friday, we present the Martin Malloy Fumio, a prestigious award which happens to be in the Academy's gift, as they say. And as always, it goes to the person, persons, or thing which through his, her, their, or its actions has or have supplied us with the most material over the last week. And listeners, there is no truth to the rumour that Mick and myself are about to be replaced as hosts of the Fumios by one Tony Barber. What nonsense!
Please, yes. If it could happen.
That's about as likely as, well, Tony taking over Wheel of Fortune. But let's get down to tax of 10. Danielle, the nominees are
Alexander Downer.
That's exactly how we normally do it.
Very good.
3 seconds.
Very good.
Gap, and then we come in. All right, Alexander Downer, who described his series of misleading comments in Parliament as loose use of language. For now, Mr. Downer remains our Minister of Foreign Affairs, loosely speaking. Next nominee, Danielle.
Australian peanut butter.
Yes, which came under scrutiny this week when some jars were found to be contaminated with rat feces. A spokesman for the industry appeared rattled when he admitted to the press that the peanut butter had really hit the fan.
Our next nominee, Danielle.
Victorian Premier Jeff Kennett.
Yes, Victorian Premier Jeff Kennett, who yesterday attended the funeral of former Greek Prime Minister Andreas Papandreou and was apparently arrested for attempting to drag off the hearse. Next nominee.
Hillary Clinton.
Who has demonstrated a willingness to communicate with people born in a previous century. Channel 9 are now keen to secure her services as next year's host of the Midday Show.
But no, worthy nominees all, but the Fumio goes to
Captain Cook's Diddy Box.
Yes, well done, Danielle. The priceless 230-year-old oak chest, which was allegedly stolen by an Adelaide man who, if the police description is to be believed, was dressed in an outrageous costume and carrying an umbrella. When questioned, the man's only comment was, But, Mickey, have you got a surprise?
Yeah, I have. I've got a bit of a treat, Tane. I've organised it to be in the studio live with us. Here it comes now. It's Captain Cook's Diddy Box.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, Tone, let's get this sucker open.
Hang on, Mickey. It could be like Raiders of the Lost Ark all over again. You don't know what's in there.
We know what's in there. It's a Diddy.
Diddy? But what Diddy?
Well, let's find out.
You're tampering with the forces of nature.
And back.
That's A Simple Life from John Farnham here at Martin Malloy. How did the Fermios go, Mickey?
Oh, same as usual. Yeah, we'll work it out later when we listen to the black box recording.
I know Danielle, the winner of our work experience competition, was a bit reluctant to take part. She said just before we've gone to air, she said, but I might just sound like an idiot. And I said, well, get in the queue.
Take a number and wait, Danielle.
That's how the show works, I'm
afraid.
And
we go to the Diddy Box.
Yeah.
And they found it. It's back.
Yeah, then it contains the theme from The Nanny.
Anything to go by. I notice no one's in a rush to find Ted Mulray's stolen Diddy Box.
Oh, yes.
That's still out there. There, Lee, you can have that.
That Diddy Box is chockers. But listen to this, because, well, it's time to take the show down a few notches, I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. If you're easily offended, you might want to turn off now, people, because police in Glebe, Sydney, today reported that a worker from the local morgue had his pockets picked and his wallet stolen yesterday. Apparently the man was furious, saying, they could have at least have done the decent thing and waited till I was dead. Have you been following the revelations about the Glebe Morgue at this independent commission against corruption, Mickey? Ratting. That's the word on everybody's lips. According to one morgue worker, he and his colleagues routinely ratted corpses, i.e. helped themselves to cash and jewellery found in the pockets of dead bodies, referred to large cash windfalls as big wins, phoned grieving relatives claiming to be social workers so they could recommend funeral companies where staff were known to be on the rat, and looked forward to Anzac Day when expired old diggers would be wheeled in, their pockets bulging with two-up winnings. Now, I know it's pretty macabre and distasteful, but I think it's good that it's out in the open. Because now that we know the kind of treatment we can expect once we've carked it, we can all start to plan for the big day. And here's my idea. Mouse traps in the pockets. Mouse traps in the pockets, Mickey. Although, if you have a look at the bloke who's alleged to be the ringleader, they'd have to be real big mouse traps. He's got fingers like Don Salamis. They wouldn't even get into my pockets.
Oh, no.
This bloke said under oath that he used to refer to honest or non-ratting forensic assistants, those who wouldn't play the game, as roadies. But if anyone looks like a roadie to me, it's this bloke. I'll tell you, when he finally goes belly up, it's going to take a team of 20 working shifts to rat their way through his gigantic pants. But, you know, is this what it's come to?
Yes, I'm afraid it is.
Is this what it's come to? We're all going to have to fit our pockets with security alarms and club locks on the off chance that we could end up in the hands of these morgue rats? Well, I'm ready for them. I'm ready for them, Mickey. Notice how I've been sitting completely still all day?
Yeah.
Well, that's because I've turned my body into a deadly and impregnable fortress. Every pocket is filled with bear traps, electrified chicken wire and exploding dye bombs. I'm paying a bloke from Wormald Security to come by wherever I am and check me out every 24 hours just in case. And I always know when he's been because I'll find one of those little folded in half business cards wedged in my bum crack. But it's worth it. Because you've got to be safe. The rats are out there.
I hear ya.
But listen, it's not all bad and macabre news from the funeral industry, because at the other end of the spectrum, we've got to say hats off to Melbourne coffin supplier Gabrielle Knight, inventor of the footy coffin.
Mm-mm.
Now, have you seen these footy coffins, Mickey?
Yeah.
They're basically coffins in club colours.
Mm.
Now, as you know, I'm not much of a footy fan, but that is a fantastic idea. Now, I know you're an AFL man, a Richmond supporter yourself. Will you be going in for that?
Mm.
A coffin in yellow and black with indentations in the lid for mourners' stubbies, an onboard thermos and as you're rolling along the conveyor belt down the crematorium, all your supporters will just be standing there singing in unison, "There he goes, there he goes, there he goes." Isn't that Tracy Chapman at Martin Molloy? We're in the next hour. Dave O'Neill is going to be dropping by. You mate.
Good. It's about time.
Is it?
Yeah, where the hell's he been? We've been waiting. No show.
We've been very short on the Dave O'Neill factor this year, but Dave's an up-and-coming comic, as I would say if I was someone like Greg Evans. And he's
a sprightly youngster.
He's part
of the very big future ahead of him.
That's right, and he's part of a pretty good show that's on in Melbourne at the moment, and it's coming to your town soon. That'll be in the next hour. Also, we've got Beat the Beasley, which didn't go off yesterday. Mm. In fact, I think it could be officially termed a debacle yesterday. Mm.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
All right. Well, if you didn't hear it, all I can say is that at the end of the segment, the entire studio was completely splattered in dolphin meat. Mm. And that usually suggests that a segment hasn't gone well, in my experience. And, of course, Radio Gladiators is coming up. And right now, though, it's time for Mick to ask the question. Mm. What's all that about?
Listen to this tone. Father Christmas is ho-ho-hoing all the way to the bank after being awarded $70,000 for a kick between the legs of his bright red pants. $70,000. That's a lot of money for a swift kick in the nuts, isn't it?
What are you talking about?
Well, he got it. He did. He was, Santa was doing his biz and he was booted. In the test, he's got himself $70,000.
This is the real Santa.
This is the real thing. And I'll, you know, make up your own assessment on that. Right. I don't want to blow it for the kiddies.
No.
But he's been kicked in the testes again and awarded $70,000. And I'm thinking, who did it? Mr. Football? Super Boot Bernie Quinlan? For $70,000, I'll stand there while a chorus line of can-can girls shuffles past, letting fly with the big ones. Oh, in fact, here they come now. That's going to be worth a lazy $200,000.
Shall I make that check out to cash, Mickey?
Cash, please.
It's coming your
way. I'll do anything for a fast buck. Poor Santa, though. Imagine that. How would it have happened, Tone?
Oh.
How would it have happened? Do you mind if I offer up a quick reenactment?
So you're going to just stretch it for us?
I thought I might just, stab at how it might have happened.
Okay.
So he would have been sitting there, I reckon, going, ho, 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 all right, young man, now have you been a good little... Oh, Jesus! Hey, come here! Hey, you can forget about the bike, pal! Oh, you're getting nothing! You hear me? Nothing!
That is, well...
What? Tone, no flowers? I'm bowing?
I'm writing to the Logies people. That's what I'm doing.
That was a good little recreation, I thought. And guess what our Santa did with the money?
What did he do?
Well, what would you think he'd do?
$70,000.
$70,000, Santa, a new pair of Ugg boots, new pipe.
Yeah, blow it all on milk and cookies.
No, went out and bought himself a new Holden Acclaim.
Oh, did he?
That sound like Santa to you? Santa's getting prezzies. How does that happen? There's a neat reworking of Christmas. Santa's been kicked in the testes and bagged a new Holden. Jeez, he's going to be sore when he enters the property market, isn't he? Is that a widely acknowledged method of payment? How will you be paying for that, sir? Cash, credit, or kicking the nuts? Is this how it works, is it? Can I take a group of friends out to dinner?
Right.
When it comes time to pay, just go, waiter, check please. Did you take a tip?
This is Martin Molloy.
Where I go, he goes. Where I go, he goes. Because we are like brothers.
Oh, and Dove's Cry, that'd be Prince here at Martin Molloy.
Mick Molloy for DODGY Investments.
If you encourage your children to invest their money from a very early age, I guarantee you, when they grow up, they'll have the confidence and understanding of the market that will enable them to provide security, not just for themselves, but their family as well.
We understand the dangers involved in playing the market. That's why we don't use our own money.
We're quite prepared to frig around with yours, though. No risk. That's what we're on about.
It's important to understand the value of a dollar. I still remember the first dollar I ever made. Like it was yesterday.
It was yesterday!
Excuse me.
Oh, jeez!
Most people like to keep their savings in a fixed-term deposit or interest-bearing account. Unfortunately, I keep my savings in my other pair of pants, which right now are in the wash. Could somebody lend me a 20? Somebody? Anybody?
An elderly woman recently came to me with her life savings, a nest egg she'd spend her entire life on. That afternoon, I paid all my speeding fines and got hooked up to cable. When she finds out, I'm sure she'll agree, her money has never worked so hard.
Thanks to international currency exchange, we can change your dollars into Mexican pesos. Huh? You get heaps more. A whole wheelbarrow full. Every day, you just get more and more pesos. Huh? How good's that?
Hey, Khan, give us your money.
Dave, the cops still out front?
What?
They are. Well, bring the car around the back and I'll scarper out the... Oh, we're on.
D-O-D-G-Y Investments. Trust us with your money. Come on, you know we're good for it.
Thanks, mate.
Okay, no worries.
Hey, mate.
Yeah?
Couldn't lend us a 20.
Piss off.
No, we'll go and get in.
Your mic's still on.
Shit.
Ironic. That's Alanis Morissette here at Martin Malloy, where for the final time this week, let's have ourselves a bit of this.
Radio Gladys.
Mickey, do you remember a little TV commercial that the people at Clio magazine ran, which I'm trying to think of the most tasteful way to describe it. Bunch of nude blokes.
Yep.
Bunch of blokes standing in a line, Frankie J, completely Frankie J, and a woman with a tape measure walking along, basically going the measure. That's the cleanest way I can put it. Anyway, news today from the Australian Broadcasting Authority, that TV commercial was officially the most complained about ad in the last year.
A complaint?
Yeah, I lodged several.
I lodged one. When they pulled out the spirit level, I thought, come on, this has all gone on a bit.
They're going too far. When they had the long fishing line with the weight, they just, you know, you've got to stop. You've got to put a stop to that kind of thing. And it just pipped at the post. I think the commercial which our listeners here on Radio Gladiators gave the thumbs down to last time we did this segment, the Sunburst Just Squeezed Orange Juice commercial.
Which I was in.
Were you?
And I still feel like an object.
Yes,
I do.
All right.
Feel dirty. Feel sullied somehow.
I think this is a cue for us to do it again, to ask people which are the TV commercials they don't like that get their goat, that offend them personally on any level whatsoever. Now, Mickey, as you know, I've perfected a brilliant way of not seeing any TV commercials, and that's just tape and everything, watching it the next night and fast-forwarding through.
You're years ahead.
But occasionally one gets through the net, and there's an ad on at the moment for some kind of furniture shop, and they're crapping on and on about something called a buffet hutch. Do you know what a buffet hutch is, Mickey?
No, what's a buffet hutch?
I don't know, but I keep hearing the word buffet hutch, and it's in my mind. It's going, buffet hutch, you've got to get a buffet hutch. I don't know what a buffet hutch is, but I feel like, am I the only person who hasn't got one? Am I missing out?
Isn't there? There's a rabbit hutch. That's where a rabbit sit. Isn't it?
Well,
that's
this
what you
is,
call it. This a hutch. And I'll have like your lettuce and stuff in it.
This is obviously.
Maybe that's it. Bring in one of those.
A rabbit hutch with a selection of dressings. Obviously,
there
it's a really good rabbit hutch.
See, we're getting to the bottom of it.
But that one gets my goat.
I got one.
Yeah.
There's an ad on, and it's for Indian takeaway, and it's called Pateks. But every time the guy says it, it sounds like buttocks. He goes, so, for the fresh taste of buttocks, you know, I mean, every half an hour, buttocks. I'm going, I don't want buttocks. Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, let's not have any...
Someone's going to bring them out in a plate with an apple in there. I mean, what? How do you like your buttocks?
Well, now we're going to meet a man who may be able to answer that query for you, Mickey, because on the line we have our local shopkeeper, the man who stands behind the counter down at our local shop. Are you there, Gurinder? Can you hear us, Gurinder?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, we just thought for a moment somebody had walked in with a balaclava on, but you're with us?
No, I'm managing well here.
Now,
everything is under control.
Good. You hail from India yourself, don't you, Gurinder?
Sorry?
You come from India yourself, don't you?
Yes, I am.
Originally. Now, just tell us, what is buttocks?
Buttocks. Have you heard of, do you see those Patak ads on telly, Gurinder?
Patak.
They sound like buttocks. Is that what you read? When you see it, you're sitting there going, oh,
I tell you what, I mean, my wife is so good at baking those spices. They taste better than anything.
Oh, I see.
Okay, better than buttocks.
Better than buttock or paddock, whatever.
That's quite a recommendation for the wife, Gurinder. Now, is there an ad which gets your goat?
Yeah, there is one on which is driving me nuts.
Which one?
you're saying that the Frouche, the Guru's one.
Oh, the Guru.
Yeah, what happens, I mean, you see this clear screen for a second, you see, okay, oh, wow, there's a heavenly picture there, and all of a sudden this fat head appears on it. It says Guru. Well, wow, there you go. Frouche, blah, 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 blah. Frouche, blah, 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 blah. And Guru said so. And get it India.
Garinda,
why get it India? Why not get it somewhere else? Go to Netherlands.
And tell us, Garinda,
go France.
What do Indian people think of Mahatma Coate?
Mahatma what?
He's a character on one of the footy shows.
Yeah.
You've not seen his work?
I haven't come across that one, sorry.
Oh, well, there's a treat in store. If you like the Guru, you'll love Mahatma Coate.
I was offended.
Okay. Well, keep listening to the show and we'll see if we can continue down that line. Now, Garinda, thanks for helping us out today.
No problem, mate.
And back behind the counter.
Yeah.
Everything okay in the shop?
Well, so far.
All right.
See you shortly.
Okay.
And watch out for the Guru, obviously. Mm. But listen, we've got to throw this out to the listeners. I think it's time. And do we have a prize for them? Well, yes, indeed. Here at Martin Molloy, and we're talking once again annoying television ads, because they've, well, the people at the Broadcasting Tribunal have declared the Clio ad with the tape measures and the naked blokes to be the most complained about ad of the year. But have we got any more? Are there other ads that get on people's wicks? Who's going to tell us about it, Mickey?
Well, Jack's got one. G'day, Jack.
How you going, boys?
Good. What's you sitting on? What gets your goat in the way of an ad?
Oh, one ad that gives me a really special pain in the ass is Bruce McAvaney and his own retentive athlete mate.
Yeah, making with the spontaneous banter that is not spontaneous at all. And it, I must say, it gets me running toys every time too.
You'd make a good statistic, that bloke.
I see. Well, let's...
Have you seen that one, Tone? Do you get into that one?
You know,
they're all sitting around going, they're knocking around like they've known each other for like, you know, 20 years, but obviously they've been introduced 2 minutes ago, and you know, some numbnut in an advertising agency has slipped them a couple of pieces of paper that's got the spontaneous banter written on it, and you know, you see it a second time and you just please.
That's one of those ads where I can get a half a second in and that's how fast I can get to the remote. That's a test. Alright, that's annoying Jack, but what's annoying Joe? Joe, tell us about it.
Yep, the Just Jeans ad. We see the clothes coming off the clothesline.
Yeah.
And then you see this little jumpy dog going up the jeans, and he falls off the cliff.
Oh, the dog falling off the cliff. What don't you like about that one, Joe?
Well, I want him to split on the ground, but he can't stack up.
There you go. You're a charmer, aren't you? Have you seen the new one they got with a duck? They've got a new one with a duck, and they've got it looks really cute.
Well,
the duck looks like it's dancing, but it's actually in a denim jacket, and I think it's really trying to get it off. Get it off me! But hey, you put some music behind it, and it looks like it's dancing.
All right.
Looks like it's having a whale of a time.
Hey, Joe, if you want to hear a dog being splattered off a cliff, we'll probably have something pretty similar happening in about half an hour on Beat the Beasley. So be listening then, Joe.
Hey, thank you.
All right, now we've got Lauren. Lauren, what's the ad you don't like?
The stupid matchmaker network ads late at night.
Oh, right. Now, is this because you don't like the ads or because you've been disappointed by the service?
Oh, it's the ads. They just annoy the hell out of me. They are the worst actors I've ever seen in my entire life. Mm. They just, the ads go for longer than the actual show does.
Yeah.
So annoying.
And don't you love the ones where they've obviously got some footage from America and they've just got some Australian actors in to redo
dialogue.
The voice, even though the person's wearing, you know, Illinois One, you
exactly.
know, a gridiron shirt on the front.
Oh, I know that. Point taken, but we give them a call, don't we?
$7 a minute.
Oh, okay. Yes, I thought it was much.
Gee, everyone seems to know all about it. Okay, thanks, Lauren. Now we've got Joanne. Joanne, tell us about the ad that you don't like.
Oh, it's a filthy ad. It's on World's Greatest Commercials. The camera focuses on this fat bloke's bum, and he's wearing a pair of Speedos, and there's a fly buzzing around his backside. And he keeps shooing it away, and it keeps coming back, and then it comes up in subtitles, you're not using the right toilet paper.
Oh, right. I was wondering what the product was going to be. I was thinking, I think I might have seen that one during the election campaign.
I hope it's not Peebo.
All right, well, I don't know if we can accept one that's on the funniest commercial program. I think it has to actually be shown, but thanks.
If it was on the world's most annoying commercials, maybe to be in with a chance.
That'd be thumbs up, but we'll have to move on to Cameron. Are you there, Cameron?
Yeah, I'm there, guys.
What one don't you like?
Well, the one I don't like is, and it was mentioned at the beginning of the segment, it's the same franchise, is the new McDonald's ads, the timeout.
about ads, where they're actually invading other ads.
Yes, because it's if you want to be annoyed by a commercial, you want to be annoyed one at a time,
well,
don't you?
Well, that's the problem. I mean, they're invading the VFL ads, which are good ads, despite the unfortunate timing that George Burns happened to die straight after they pumped it out.
That's right, but not before recording an alternative version, you may have noticed.
that gets my goat, too. Middle of an ad, all of a sudden you're in another ad, and you're lost in this labyrinth of pap.
So suddenly there's twice as many ads in the ad break. Oh, is that a good trend? Well, let's talk to Sandra now. You there, Sandra?
Hello.
Sandra, what's the ad that gets you goat?
Well, I hate most skincare commercials, but I just can't stand the one for the Ponds Institute.
Oh, the Ponds Institute. Is it a recognised seat of learning, the Ponds Institute?
Oh, I don't know, but we better tell Senator Amanda Vanstone about this when she starts considering those budget cuts. definitely deserves it. I mean, you know how the ad opens up? You've got these white-coated women gliding around. Are they testing for Ebola or all that infected peanut butter? Moisturiser. This is a world number one priority here.
It's important and valuable ongoing work down at the Ponds Institute.
I'm a graduate.
Sandra.
I'm a graduate.
Really?
Yes, we've got a great alma mater. Yes, we get together. We're going to have a reunion down the Ponds Institute in about 20 years. We'll get together in the white coats, sit around, point at screens indiscriminately.
And then those troublemakers from the Cousins Institute will come over and institute some kind of panty raid.
You got yourself a Bachelor of Makeup or a bomb there. Is that correct?
Well, I think something like that. Now, Sandra, I don't know if you're the winner today. Who is the winner, Mickey? Which ad gets your goat out of that list the most?
Well, I've got to say, the one that does annoy me the most is McAvaney right back up the top.
I think we can tell that. It's Jack. Are you there, Jack?
Thank you very much.
See, there's been some positive, byproduct of your hatred of this commercial. You've got yourself the 3-pack of CDs, and we want you to hang on the line as we welcome somebody. Give him a round of applause, Gracie. He's coming out of the booth now. It's a very tricky procedure. He's with us. It's Pete Smith.
How are you, boys?
Oh, not too bad.
Nice to see you from this side.
Yes.
And thankfully, none of your ads were mentioned, Pete. I'm happy to say.
Very relieved. Very relieved indeed. It's where I make my money.
You're the chairman of the board when it comes to advertising, Pete, and everyone knows it.
Now, you've got a job to do, Pete, because we've wheeled in the barrel. And how many barrel draws do you reckon you've done in your long career?
It's not possible to count on this calculator. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, give it your best. Reach in. We've got 5 names from this week's Gladiators.
Oh, yes.
We're going to be sending somebody to Bali, courtesy Creative Holidays.
Well, it's Anthony Butts of Corowa.
Hey! Anthony Butts, get your butt Bali side.
Yes, and of course, he was the person who actually witnessed Tim Fisher having his hair blown up by an upturned hand dryer in the toilets, I think, at some kind of farm show that he went to. What a fantastic bit of work, and Anthony, you're off to Bali. Sorry to all the other people who didn't come out of the barrel, but thanks very much, Pete Smith, for popping out.
See you soon.
And you've got to get back in there for Beat the Beasley.
Immediately.
That's in the next hour, along with Dave O'Neill. And in this hour of Martin Malloy, Alexander Downer apologises yet again. We'll play Beat the Beasley. And next up, meet comedian Dave O'Neill. Thing but the girl here at Martin Malloy. It's the second hour. Let's not waste any more time, Mickey. Let's get our guest straight in here.
Mm.
This bloke, he's a stand-up comedian. He's a comedy writer. He's part of a fantastic show called Smells Like Bin Night, which you can see at The Last Laugh in Melbourne. It's already been to Adelaide. Mm. It's probably coming to your town eventually. He's getting around the whole country alphabetically.
Oh, yeah.
From what I understand, let's wheel him in. It's Dave O'Neill.
Thank you.
There he is.
Great to be here. Hi, guys.
Dave, just before we get started, I should tell you that the pressure's on because of the 4 guests we've had on the show this week. 2 of them have subsequently received job offers.
Oh, really?
As a result of their appearance on the show.
So Baby John Burgess appeared on your show?
I'm afraid he did. He did indeed. No, Tony Barber appeared on our show.
Oh, really? Because I saw Baby John washing Mick's car in the car park.
With his old moustache. He's operating it like a chamois.
Borrowed off Ivan Millet, I believe.
Anyway, correct. Yes. That's allegedly.
It's on the road. That moustache is actually on its own tour.
Now, Dave, a lot of people listening in various parts of the country might not be familiar with the resume. Go back to the beginning. How'd you get into the comedy game? Where did it all start?
I was working in public relations, PR, when I worked in Stood for Poor Relations.
Right.
I was that bad at the job, I was retrenched.
Yes.
And when I was retrenched, I actually wrote a song about the boss and went into the board meeting and sang it about her. And it was a very detrimental song. And my immediate boss said, I don't know, I reckon you've got balls. You should be in stand-up comedy. So I did my first tryout. That was about 7 years ago. And since then, it's all been uphill. Downhill.
Right.
It's been a roller coaster ride.
Oh,
it's been amazing.
It's just been the people I get to meet. It's fantastic.
Well, you've met us. You've met Pete Smith. And you're leaving with a Celine Dion CD, so it's all been worth coming in here today. And Dave, I understand you also did a bit of hot dog work in the early days.
Yes, I worked in the hot dog industry. I worked behind the counter in a hot dog shop. No caravan work for me. Now, I was actually in a shop. And you know the most common questions asked in a hot dog shop? One.
Can I have a hot dog?
No. Oh, that's number two, okay. Yeah. Are the hot dogs hot?
Yes.
And can you have tomato sauce with them? This is incredible. And I actually went back to the hot dog shop. I haven't worked there for about 10 years. I went back then. I said to the guy, just sort of try and make that sort of trivial conversation that you do with shopkeepers. You know? I actually said to him, hey, I used to work in this shop. And he said, oh, we get heaps of people coming here saying that. Well, that's the sort of thing I make up to impress people, you know. Like, I'm at parties big-noting myself, you know. Yeah. My girlfriend goes, where are you going, Dave? Oh, I'm just going down to the hot dog shop to big-note myself to the guy, yeah.
And what sort of hot dogs are we talking? Are we talking the kind of fancy schmancy kind of, designer hot dogs? Are we
not
talking
at all.
The bendy red ones?
The bendy red ones all the way. And they just used to boil in that fat all night. I got addicted to them, and I was on like one or two hot dogs a day. I was even dropping in when I wasn't even working.
Yeah.
Eventually, I was asking people for money, you know, had to move back in with my parents. It was really sad. And eventually, the government put me on a sausage roll program. But it's never the same. Don't listen to anyone. It's not the same as a hot dog.
Now,
and you walk past a hot dog store now, do you just keep walking?
Just keep walking.
You got it under control?
Yeah. I find myself driving past nightclubs at night, though, you know, it's awful.
Oh,
yeah.
No!
Dave, put it behind you. There's no going back. Now, tell us about Smells Like Bin Night with yourself and Fred Rowan, who people might have seen doing a bit of song work on, I think...
Something Hot Before Bed. If you're unemployed or a drug addict, you may have seen it at 11:30 at night.
And a couple of other people, I believe.
Paul Kaleja and Felicity Minajew.
What are you up to in the show? What's it all about? Is it? I know it's on in Melbourne, so can it compete with your Andrew Lloyd Webber spectacles?
Oh, it certainly can. It's on The Last Laugh in beautiful Melbourne. It's already been to Adelaide, and we're possibly going to Sydney and Brisbane. Are we out? Wollongong's a definite, and so is Maroochydore, because I've got to catch up with my relatives. But it's just a mixture of songs, sketches, and stand-up. We get stuck into people like Alanis Morissette, Tina Arena, Tommy Emmanuel.
Right.
People like Alanis Morissette, I love her, right? But what's she so angry about? She's, what, 22? What, she got caught without her pee plates on one night? Or because you know there's a 45-year-old producer writing the songs with her, because it's on the CD. It's just it was a keyboardist in Foreigner, you know.
Don't worry about it. You have a mineral water. I'll fix up the songs. Don't worry about it, darling.
Hey, buddy. You can come on the show and you can bag Alanis Morissette till the cows come home, but you mentioned Foreigner in that tone again and I'm out that door.
Sorry, mate. Sorry, I was out of line. Way out of line, mate. Sorry.
And what kind of reaction are you getting from audiences? Is it a sort of show where people are coming along and going the cack? Or is it the sort of show where they're bussing them in from out of town, people have no idea what they're going to see, and you're being met with total indifference? Because Dave, I'm saying that because I've played that venue and I know how it works.
Yes, mate. No. We played the Comedy Festival. We got people coming to see our show. The Last Laugh, you do get a more general audience. So you get buses, you get school kids, you get elderly, you get everything in there. But it's a great night out, and they get into the silver chair. We do a bit of the chair.
Oh, do you?
Which has been great, because in Adelaide we actually met the drummer's sister from Silverchair.
Wow.
And she let us in on the secret. You know, Silverchair has really been it's really been good for the fathers of the band. Because the drummer's father was like a 42-year-old plumber from Wollongong, right? Or Newcastle, I think they're from.
Yes.
And he thought his life was basically over. Until then, his 15-year-old son, Ben, got in Silverchair, bang, they're all millionaires. He quit his job, he's touring the States, getting drunk every night. He's having a great time.
And what, I don't think we've ever seen a photograph of the Silverchair dads. What do they look like? Are they hip dads or are they comb-over blokes?
Oh, they're sort of, I think they might be comb-over blokes.
Yeah, it'll be a good look, because that's how Silverchair are going to look in about 30, 40 years. Just bang some guitars on the old blokes and we'll get a glimpse into the future.
And we'll get a before and after picture happening.
They'll be holding up two pluses, you know, for sure.
They'll be threatening hot dog salesmen. Now, Dave, I understand you've also worked with ventriloquists.
Yeah, I've had a long history with working with ventriloquists. David Strassman being the number one.
All right, we want a bit of behind-the-scenes vent talk from you, so just sit right there, and that'll be next on Martin Malloy. Queen here at Martin Malloy, and Dave O'Neill, comedian Dave O'Neill, is with us on the panel today, and we've just been watching the telly, and there's all this amazing footage of Gillian Anderson from The X-Files.
Did a shopping centre appearance.
She was in Brisbane yesterday. I think she's being mobbed in Melbourne today. Are you buying into this, Dave?
I don't see what the big deal is about The X-Files. I just reckon it's a direct rip-off of Scooby-Doo. You know, weird shit happens and two people investigate and it's always the mayor doing something weird with a sheet and a balloon and a mirror.
So you'd like to see Mulder and Scully driving the mystery machine.
Yeah. I've never seen an episode of The X-Files ending with, I would have gotten away with this if it wasn't for you meddling kids.
Yes, that would have been good if the stretchy liver-eating long-arm bloke
had delivered that line.
Instead of just being folded up underneath the escalator blades, had pulled off the hair and revealed to be the bloke who runs the local amusement parlour. But enough of that, enough X-Files talk. Dave, in your experience as a stand-up comedian, you've supported everybody. You've supported everybody from Neil Diamond to Neil Diamond.
My father.
Silverchair, I think you've supported them on occasion. What about ventriloquists? You've worked with Vince a bit.
I did 2 years with David Strassman on consecutive tours, and we went to, you know, Brisbane, Adelaide, Hobart, etc., etc., etc. But we had some great, crazy experiences, and one of the best ones was at the end of his show. I know you guys have seen it because you were there nearly every night. Because he makes his dummies talk. It's just amazing things he does with them. Anyway, at the end of the show, the dummies come alive. They all come alive and sing all together now, the Beatles song, and it's a great end of the show. It's very happy. It's very up. Mm. And especially the bear comes alive. He's sitting on a seat, right? And the bear came alive this night, and he's sitting on the seat electronically on the seat, you know, moving. All the little kids are clapping. Grannies are laughing. And then suddenly the bear just rolled off the chair into the audience. And there was just this electronic arm just going,
run for your life!
It was like Future World, you know, that movie. And there was just kids, you know, childhood just pissing off. You could just nightmares of electronic arms going on. It was just crazy.
And is it secretive? Do you have to sign a clause? Is it like Copperfield backstage?
Yeah. And you can't pick on Chuck the dummy either, you know. Can't do weird things to Chuck when Dave's not there.
And how do they travel around? Are they just bagged up? They're put in a case? I mean, do they travel up the front of the plane with you guys? I mean, where are they?
They're in the boot.
In the boot.
With a red cordial. But, we had some great times. And sort of a weird thing. Towards the end of the tour, Dave took all the guys out to a... it was to one of those strip clubs like Bar 20 or Santa Fe Girl. I mean, I'm ideologically opposed to it like you guys are too. Yeah. You know, but I thought I'd better go there to know what I'm hating, you know what I mean?
Sure. Hang on a second, Dave. Just go back a sec. At the end of the season, the ventriloquist takes the support act to a strip club. There's a showbiz tradition that I'm not familiar with.
Does he take his dummies?
Yeah, Chuck was getting pissed. Teddy Bear got knocked back on ID problems. Anyway, he had a fight with his wife. She didn't want to go, obviously, because she's a woman, etc. And said, so we and all the bar stuff went along, the male bar stuff, went in this private room. And this woman came out and started dancing. And she had a mask on, this cowboy sort of thing. And everyone's clapping along. Chuck's getting pissed. And,
Teddy Bear's falling off the table.
This is electronic hand. And so she took all her clothes off and then she took her mask off and it was Dave's wife.
Hang on a second.
See, that's where it turns weird, that story. And he organised, he said it was the best practical joke he's ever done on his friends. I don't know about you, but I'm always stripping for my girlfriend's friends, you know. That's how I got this cold.
You know.
And when she was speaking, was he drinking a glass of water? I mean, was it? It was her own voice. It was her. You sure?
Yeah, I'm not sure about
it. Didn't fall over to reveal a little electronic arm. No.
Sure, we would have seen it from the angle we were at. But,
and that's a true story, is it, Dave?
That's absolutely true. And that has gone down in the legend books of comedy.
And I'm just guessing that you're not going to be supporting when he comes out here next year.
No. I didn't really want to because I've done it 2 years in a row. I thought, well, I might as well burn a bridge while I'm on this show. Do it properly. Because he's not American. He actually lives in a caravan in Wagga Wagga.
Does
he?
Oh, well.
He's American at all.
There's somebody else working his voice. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for coming in today, Dave, and illuminating your showbiz behind-the-scenes lifestyle for us and our listeners. And once again, the name of the show you're in is...
Smells Like Midnight.
It's on in...
The Last Laugh.
At...
At The Last Laugh.
In...
For the next 5 years in Melbourne.
In Melbourne, of course it is. Right. And what have we got, Gracie?
We're
going to go straight to our next... You might want to just sit around and see how a professional radio show really unfolds, Dave. It's time... What is it time for?
It's time to play Beat the Beasley. Here's how it works. Nick and Tony have commissioned the nation's finest designers, engineers and craftsmen to construct several frighteningly lifelike replicas of Federal Opposition Leader Kim Beazley. Every day on Martin Malloy, one of these enormous structures will be dropped onto something fragile. Winner Beazley.
Will do, Pete. And Mick, Dave's show is, of course, on in Melbourne. And while we're talking Melbourne, do you know what starts in Melbourne on Monday?
No.
Construction of a one-off $21 million high-tech supercar, which is going to be as part of a spearhead by local car makers to get into the lucrative Asian market. Mm. No expense will be spared on constructing the supercar. Mm-hmm. $21 million!
Jeff Kennett's been pinging around the state as we speak.
That's what he's up
going
to.
Like the clappers.
How much would the rego cost on a $21 million supercar? Well, the good news for Beat the Beazley fans is that we've got the same people in and they've constructed a $21 million Super Beazley.
Of course they have.
And what are we going to drop it onto, Mickey? I hope it's something that people will enjoy hearing destroyed.
It's the master tape of the Nanny theme song.
Oh, yes, please. We heard a bit of it earlier in the show, and we're going to actually put it to bed once and for all. It's your chance to destroy the original recording of the theme from the Nanny. All you have to do is answer a few trivia questions. It's quite simple. Call us here. It won't hurt at all on Beat the Beazley, 1-800-657-657. Martin Malloy, for the final time this week, it's time to play Beat the Beazley. Mm. And today, it's not just any Beazley, it's a $21 million Super Beazley made by the same people who are working on the supercar, which is set to take Australian motoring technology into Asia. Mm. Now, we're going to drop the Super Beazley onto the original master recording of the theme from The Nanny by popular request. Who's going to help us out, Mickey?
A young lady named Melissa. Hello, Melissa.
Hi, how are you?
Not too bad. How are you?
Oh, pretty good, thanks.
Okay, well, I think all that's about to change.
Yes, it didn't go too well. Did you hear it yesterday, Melissa?
Yes.
Do you think the questions are too hard on the segment?
Only the political ones.
Oh, right. Well, what have we... Oh, there's not too much.
Yeah, right. 4 out of 5 political ones tonight, right?
Yes, okay. Well, we've cleaned it up for you. And whereabouts are you calling us from, by the way?
From Woombye.
Oh, what's going on up there?
Well, my children are dismantling my house like they do every day religiously. And that's about it.
And that's an ongoing project for the kids, is it?
Yeah, definitely.
And they've got their hard hats on.
All right, Melissa. Well, we'll need our hard hats on here because the crane is, as we speak, moving the Super Beazley into position. It's under quite a bit of strain today. When you hear the gunshot, the questions will be coming your way. Oh, name the actress who plays the Nanny.
Oh, Drescher.
Yes. Impersonate her.
Oh, Mr. Sheffield.
Yes, indeed. What is Mark Philippoussis' nickname?
Oh, Christ. Poo, I don't know. I've got no idea.
It's neither Christ nor poo. It's the scud.
Okay, name two types of peanut butter.
Kraft and ETA.
Yes.
Oh, I'll have to do.
Oh, crunchy and food, whatever.
Salmonella, but name somebody who wears a cape in public.
In public?
Yeah.
Batman, I guess.
Batman?
There you go. Okay, name someone who couldn't get away with wearing a cape in public.
Oh, God. Jesus, me, probably.
Oh, would can we accept that?
I don't know.
Yeah, okay. That's five correct answers. And you've effectively beaten the Beazley. Well done, Melissa. The $1,500 watch, courtesy of Michael Hill Jewelers, is all yours.
Oh, my God, I can't believe it. Are you sure there's no decimal point supposed to be in there somewhere?
Oh, no, it's a proper 1500
buck. Are you serious?
Yeah, it's a 1500 buck watch. It's the
I can't believe it.
The Sector Sports watch. I'm sure it's the one worn by Mark Philippoussis, or as you call him, Christ.
Put it on, Melissa, and you will get away with wearing a cape.
Oh, you guys are unreal. Thank you.
We're gonna have, right. We'll have to take Melissa's word that she doesn't wear a cape or wouldn't look good in a cape.
No, I'd be arrested. Put it that way.
Okay. All right, fair enough. And thanks for playing Beat the Beazley.
Okay.
But, you know, the public, I think, would really like to hear the Beazley be dropped. Are you going to give us permission, Melissa?
Most definitely.
Okay.
Flushing, Queens.
Yes, a lot of acclaim for that decision here in the studio. Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you.
And we'll be back with another week of Beat the Beasley from Monday here at Martin Molloy. Winding up today's and indeed this week's Martin Molloy. And we haven't been doing it alone today, Mickey, because we've been observed throughout today's program by, well, in case you're just joining us, the winner of the Martin Molloy Youth Training Scheme, Danielle. She's 15, and I understand she's now considering a career in radio. Is that right, Danielle?
Yep.
Were you impressed by Pete Smith? You got to meet him.
Yep.
Will that impress kids at school?
I think so.
Okay, well, there you go. I mean, we were going to get Silverchair in here, but we thought, nah, Mr. Copperart, that'll... Did we make the wrong choice there?
Yes.
Okay. All right, well, Pete Smith was pretty impressive on the axe in his day. Mm. But nonetheless, we've got to forge on, and I'm sorry that you have to witness this, Danielle, but it's time to end the week, as we always do, by packing full the Comedy Incinerator. This is where we take all the really lame, weak and embarrassing gags we somehow didn't have time for during the week. We pack them into the incinerator and we get them out of our systems once and for all. Start the clock, Gracie. Kick things off, Mick.
Police are investigating the disappearance of dangerous drugs stolen from an impotency clinic last week, which experts say could cause a man to have an erection lasting up to 5 days. Be on the lookout for a Caucasian male in his early 20s refusing to wear tracky decks. Thanks, crowd. Came in eventually. They had to think about it. Then had a laugh.
Yes, I think we're starting to get the idea. If people haven't heard the segment before, they know how it works. Now, Health Minister Michael Waldrich, the owl, yesterday announced that if legalised, euthanasia would be banned from Medicare and that no Australian would be able to claim a rebate for euthanasia services. How exactly a dead person would lodge the necessary forms was something Dr. Waldrich neglected to explain.
Jeff Kennett has returned from Greece embroiled in a storm of controversy over his behaviour at the funeral of Greek Prime Minister Andre Papandreou. Kennett angered officials when he wound down the window of the car travelling behind the hearse, hit the horn and shouted, "Come on, move it, buddy, we're not here for a haircut!"
A former girlfriend of Unabomber suspect Ted Kaczynski this week gave an interview to the press which may help convict him. Although she never actually saw him constructing any mail bombs, she did say that during their 3-year relationship, he perpetrated so many Dutch ovens, she renamed him the Duna Bomber.
That's how the segment works.
I'm just fulfilling the criteria.
Good. An in-store Santa has been given a huge payout after he was kicked in the testicles by a child during an in-store appearance. The court awarded $70,000 to Father Christmas for damage to his Santa sack.
Oh, dear. I think you've broken the segment, Mickey Lee. Let's crank up the incinerator, get home and take a long, hard look at ourselves. And I think you need to as well, Gracie. Let's think how... What is a bit of satellite trouble?
There we go.
It's a bit of loose use of language.
I think it's my last joke, and he's turned the microphones off.
Well, thanks to our guests today, Dave O'Neill, Pete Smith, Gorinda, Danielle, Melissa, and all our gladiators. As always, a big end of week salute to our producer, Gracie.
Hey, Gracie.
Our assistant, Emma.
Emma.
Making the sketches, it's Vicky.
On you, Vicky.
All the button pushers round the network grid.
Go for it. Pushes.
And, of course, we'll be back on Monday with another week of Martin Molloy. And joining us, the next week, we'll have Magda Szubanski. We'll have Mark Thompson, the author of Blokes and Shits, once again. Steve Bedwell and Gillian Anderson from The X-Files. So until then, remember, if you can't say something intelligent, come talk to us.
Martin Molloy, a misguided production in association with Half-Baked Ideas, Ill-Conceived Concepts, Proprietary Limited. Pete Smith speaking.